welcome to this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We are glad that you are with us today. We're in the middle of our fall fun drive, and this year, your support matters more than ever. Prairie Public belongs to you, our listeners, and our goal is simple: to keep creating programs that bring real value, thoughtful conversations, and community voices to air with you each day. When you give, you help sustain the trusted news, cultural stories, and local programs you count on. Coming up today, we'll cut through the noise around vaccines with Essentia Health's Kelsey Metzger. Then we'll head to downtown Fargo for a lively Oktoberfest preview at Wurst Beer Hall. And later, Annie Beck from the North Dakota Gateway to Science shares how grants and donors fuel hands-on STEM learning across our state. That's all ahead today on Main Street. And of course, it's made possible with your support. Main Street begins today, where we're living in a world where vaccines should be a straightforward matter of science and public health. The conversation has instead become clouded by politics, confusing information and fear, conflicting voices in the media, doubts raised by public figures, and shifting guidance have left many people wondering what and who to trust. Well, today on Main Street, we're going to cut through the noise. Our guest is Essentia Health Immunization Manager, Kelsey Metzger. She joins us to separate fact from fiction and to remind us why science must stay at the center of the discussion. Kelsey, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you.
As I noted, there's been a lot of conflicting information. I pay attention to this stuff, Kelsey, and I'm confused. A lot of different voices in the media talking about this. And as a healthcare professional, let's start by asking you, how do you cut through the noise to help people understand what's backed by science?
Yeah, it is definitely a difficult conversation and topic to have.
Why should it be? When we grew up, we knew the schedule, and we followed the schedule, and it was easy. Everyone understood, and now it's just so political.
And I think the main center, I think, of this is that vaccines work too well. If you think of our grandparents, my grandparents, growing up, these were new scientific research. This was new scientific things that were coming out, and they saw an absolute impact of how those vaccines helped save people, helped make our communities healthier, helped keep our children healthier.
How can that at all be a bad thing?
I know. But as you know, time has gone by and we have really gotten, like you said, people knew the schedule. We knew exactly what to expect. We aren't seeing those diseases as much because in this healthcare economy that we have in the United States, we just have done a really good job of vaccinating people and keeping our communities and our children healthy. And so when we're not seeing those diseases as much, people are questioning, why do I have to get vaccinated if we don't think that the measles is coming back around or if polio isn't coming back around? And it's still important to continue those vaccinations so we don't see those things coming back. And as we have people have decreased immunizing themselves and their children, we are seeing those infectious diseases come back. And they do have very critical and serious effects when they affect people who are not vaccinated.
So even when we hear news stories about that across the country, what about here in North Dakota? Are you now seeing science and data that says, no, it's here too?
Yes. Yep. Earlier this year, we had a very large measles outbreak in one specific county in western North Dakota, and it was due to international travel. They had traveled outside of the United States, they were not vaccinated, and they brought that back with them. And then not only does it affect that one patient, but then it spreads very quickly. And so we saw giant spreads of it in that one county. Thankfully, the North Dakota Health and Human Services really got boots on the ground there and really started educating people about the importance of getting themselves vaccinated, but also to help contain that so we're not spreading. But we did see other cases that were spread throughout North Dakota, but again, from international travel. So when people think that it's not going to affect them here in the United States, it does when we go elsewhere and who to those places that don't have great vaccination.
But I want to ask you about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because he's been at the front of really raising doubts. And those doubts, Kelsey, have gained traction with some groups. What do you see as the biggest misconceptions he has contributed to? And why isn't the voice of science echoing loud enough in response? Mm-hmm.
I think that the doubts that he has sown, not just recently, but for many years, has impacted people for many years, for decades. And unfortunately, the seeds that he is sowing amongst people is really not backed in science. He takes something that can be very small or something that is not really backed by political or scientific studies. They're more political driven studies. And so he'll take something very small, like the autism thing, which we know has not been proven to be connected to vaccines, but he takes that and he makes people question things. And I don't think questioning things, and in the scientific community, we question things all the time. As healthcare providers, we want patients to question, but we also want them to understand what is on the right side, what is on the wrong side of what that scientific information is, and how it can impact them individually.
Flu shots and COVID shots. There's been so much discussion about it. I can't tell you if I can go get a COVID shot or not because I'm confused.
Yes. So influenza vaccine, that started a month ago. September 1st is when we started influenza vaccine across the country. Influenza vaccine changes from year to year, and it is dependent on what kinds of influenza strains that we have seen. It's been more difficult to track those influenza strains because there's so many of them. Different regions of the United States can have different strains. And so what they try to do is they figure out what are the strains that we're seeing the most consistently across the country.
And the folks who do this work is the CDC.
Yes.
Are you worried that recent decisions about the CDC will also cloud people's judgment on whether or not these current vaccines are safe and effective?
Yeah, I think that is certainly something that everybody, whether you're in healthcare or not, is concerned about, because there's been a lot of turnover. So who do you trust? Who do you trust within the CDC? Who do you trust within those advisory committees? And it's difficult for us to have that conversation with our patients when they ask tough questions like that, because a lot of times it's unknown to us too as to what that future looks like. But I think it's still really important to know that these are still based off of scientific studies. These are still based off of evidence practice and the best practices that we have seen of how the influenza vaccine decreases cases, it decreases hospitalizations, and it decreases deaths.
What about COVID?
Oh, COVID vaccine. I think of all the vaccines, COVID vaccine has probably been the most political out of all of them. And we have certainly seen ebbs and flows of COVID. I was just started in my role when COVID hit. We have had a lot of difficult conversations with people about the COVID vaccine. Starting out, a lot of people thought, you know, the COVID disease is so very new. How can we have a vaccine that has come out so quickly? And the answer is they were working on a vaccine with this mRNA technology for a very long time. And so when the COVID disease came about, they were able to isolate that specific disease and put it within this mRNA. And what was resulted was one of the most effective vaccines we have ever seen. And that was across Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson had one as well. And so it did a very good job of people getting vaccinated and decreasing the disease or decreasing the symptoms that you had if you received COVID.
So some folks, I believe, are thinking, you know what, COVID's not as big a deal as it used to be. Mm-hmm. We have herd immunity now. The disease is weaker, whatever that mm-hmm. means. Do you agree with that?
No, because we don't have herd immunity. We never got to the place of having enough people vaccinated in our area to get to the point of what we could consider herd immunity. Herd immunity is when you can get everybody vaccinated that is qualified to get vaccinated. Some people can't get vaccinated due to very serious health issues. But that's where the herd immunity comes around. It's the herd that is the protective barrier around those weaker people in the middle. And we never quite got there.
So when I got my first COVID shot, a few months later, I got my second COVID shot. A few months later, I have my third COVID shot. I carry this card around back in the day, and I wrote things in, or my provider wrote things in. And is it 4 months? Is it 6 months? What's the recommendation today?
So the recommendation today, that just came out a couple weeks ago from the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices, the CDC's advisory committee, is that everybody 6 months and older can receive a COVID vaccine if they wish.
Can or should?
Can. That is
why do you say can?
They can receive one. Because what they have said is that it may be more beneficial to those who have serious health conditions to receive that vaccine to protect them. And they don't feel like it may be as important for that younger population or for healthier people. It's very confusing. The other layer of confusion that they've added onto there is this thing called shared clinical decision making.
Oh my goodness.
Yep, which we do currently have that recommendation for several of our other vaccines.
What is that?
But what that means is that essentially if you want, as a patient, you could come in and you could say, I want a COVID vaccine, we would certainly give one to you. Now, if you come in and you say, I would like a COVID vaccine, but I have questions and I have concerns, we would set you up with a healthcare provider, a registered nurse who is very knowledgeable about immunizations, a physician, an advanced practice provider like a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant to sit down with you and say, okay, what are our questions? What are our concerns? Let's go over what your risks and your benefits are to receiving the vaccine. And we essentially have that conversation with you so you can make the best decision for yourself. Shared clinical decision making, I think, is going to become more of the normal for what the CDC has for immunizations.
So the bottom line there is have a conversation with your healthcare provider.
Yep.
Okay, so if I've decided I want a COVID vaccine, mm-hmm. is it once a year now?
Yes.
Is it combined with the flu vaccine? Should I get them at the same time?
They are not combined together yet. There is still lots of research being done on how we can best combine those vaccines. But that's not available quite yet.
The combined vaccine. They're still available individually.
Separately, yes. And you can get them at the same time. We actually recommend that you get them at the same time because you're only having one visit, you're only having one time that you have to come in and get seen, and then you're going to be taken care of for that season.
Season or year for COVID?
For the season is what we consider. So we consider a season to be different depending on what region of the country that you're
in. How about our region?
Our region is going to be October through March.
So then in March, is the recommendation I get another COVID shot?
Dependent. Another caveat. It is dependent because the CDC continues to come out with recommendations. And those recommendations are mostly for those that are immunocompromised or have serious health conditions that they might come out and recommend, yep, we think you should get a booster dose because we're still seeing that there's a high number of COVID cases happening around the country.
I've had COVID in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm now immune. I don't have to worry about it. True?
False. A lot of people think that if you have had COVID, that your natural antigens that you have in your body are going to be good enough to fight it off, and that's not the case. One of the reasons that immunizations were created is because they do a better job of showing your body how to fight a disease. So your natural antigens, they know what a COVID virus looks like. They know somewhat of how to fight that off. But an immunization is going to do a better job of guarding or getting your body ready to guard against that COVID virus as it comes in.
If I'm a parent, how young should my child be before they should get a COVID shot? And should we get them through our entire life as we age, as we become senior citizens?
Yes. 6 months old is the youngest that you can receive a COVID vaccine. And certainly at 6 months old, you're going to have other vaccines that your child will be due for, and they can all be given at the same time. Again, our bodies are made to be able to do that.
As we wrap up our conversation, Kelsey, older adults, there's shingles, there's pneumonia, there's COVID, there's flu. Mm-hmm. What are the recommendations and guidelines?
Yep, so COVID and flu right now would be every year. Get those every single year. Pneumococcal vaccine continues to evolve. It used to be you had to get a couple of them. Now you only have to get one.
At what age?
65 and older for your pneumococcal vaccine.
And that protects against pneumonia.
And that protects against, 20 different kinds of ammonia.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So I'm gonna allow you and ask you and hope that you can give your best advice today for people who have questions about vaccines.
My best advice for people who have questions about vaccines today. My first best piece of advice is to have a conversation with your trusted healthcare professional.
I'm going to insert here. Mm-hmm. Don't depend on the internet.
Don't depend on the internet. Everybody is going to have an opinion about everything. Your favorite color might be blue, and I hate the color blue. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to trust that wearing the color blue is not right for you. So stay off of the internet, because everybody's going to have an opinion about something. And that's exactly what it is. It's an opinion. It's not evidence-based practice. It isn't scientifically backed. So have a conversation with your trusted healthcare professional.
Kelsey, the government shut down yesterday. Has that already impacted your thoughts on vaccines and their availability and your messaging?
Yeah, so unfortunately, the government shut down yesterday. We don't know much about what areas it's all going to affect. However, the CDC has still not gone forward and approved the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices guidelines, recommendations
that we've been talking about.
So this doesn't necessarily affect those of us that have private insurance, but it affects those that have state insurance, Medicare, Medicaid. And what it is essentially doing is those children that receive vaccines under the federal program, the Vaccines for Children, the VFC program, our states that run those programs can't send out their vaccine until they have CDC approval to do so. So what we're doing is what we're seeing is we have private vaccine coming in. We can vaccinate people, but those that have or children that are under that Vaccines for Children program, their vaccine is a separate stock that we receive, and we haven't received that yet. That is not stopping us though from vaccinating those children. We have contracts with the state that say if we don't have state vaccine available, we can give private vaccine to those kids. And on the back end, we just figure it out. So at Essentia Health, we have committed that we will be vaccinating those kids. Whoever comes in, whatever their insurance is, if you don't have insurance, we are still going to vaccinate you. Because we don't need a disparity in people who want to get vaccinated. It's that important. And it's not the kids' fault that the government can't figure it out.
Kelsey Nefsker is Essentia Health's Immunization Manager. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Really appreciate the conversation.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Health Partners, offering a simplified approach to health plans, customer service, and community partnerships in North Dakota. Learn more at healthpartners.com/Dakota Plans.
We're live here in the Main Street studio. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and you're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. It is 3:25 past the hour here on this Thursday. We are glad that you are with us. And if you're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public, it's powered by members, powered by folks just like you. And right now, your support is what keeps us strong. We hope that you'll make a gift today at prairiepublic.org or by calling us at 1-800-359-4145. I'm excited to be in the Main Street studio with a gentleman who you have heard for years here on Prairie Public. held this seat for 13 years as host of Main Street. You hear him on Dakota Datebook often. Merrill Pepcorn joins us to talk about, Merrill, we reach ranchers, we reach educators, artists, change makers. And you've been in this seat. It's local journalism that is built on trust. It exists because our listeners make it possible.
You know, thanks, by the way, for inviting me to be here.
So it's, happy you're here.
Yeah, well, I'm happy I'm in the guest chair rather than the host chair.
We can switch.
Doing helping during this fall fundraiser, which has traditionally been the time for great fundraising here. And as you, the listener, know right now, we need your we. I speak of we as me, a member of Prairie Public. And as a contributor, I donate my time to voice Dakota Datebook here as well, as I've been doing for over 20 years. As a matter of fact, our first Datebook aired, I believe, on October 1st of 2003.
How about that?
Yeah, I can be, you know, and talk about people listening all over the state. And it, you mentioned it, Craig. It's the local news. It's Dave Thompson and Todd McDonald and Danielle Webster. News from North Dakota about North Dakota. And programs like Dakota Datebook. I can be standing in line for groceries down in Wishick, North Dakota, and say, where's the sausage? And somebody will turn around and go, are you Merrill Pepcorn? So they recognize it. People recognize our voices, the programming here on Prairie Public. And that is because we're able to keep it on the air because of donations, because of contributions from listeners like you. My favorite way to contribute is on the phone. And you can do that at 800-359-4145, or a lot of people like going to simplyprairiepublic.org.
It's no secret, Merrill, we're in the middle of a crisis. Yeah. But if anyone can overcome it, we can, and our listeners can. We hope that folks give monthly, become a sustaining member to help us fight long-term funding losses that have been no secret. They're upon us now, and we're doing our best to ask our listeners who are listening now to step up and be supporting members of Prairie Public. What it gives us is stability. It gives us a future. It gives us an opportunity to understand that our vision is worthwhile here in North Dakota. It doesn't matter, Merrill, how much people want to contribute. The fact is, it's good to become a sustaining member. It certainly helps us, helps, I think, our entire community understand, like you said, there's support there for Prairie Public. We're asking you to come to the table, 800-359-4145, or go online to prairiepublic.org. You mentioned Danielle Webster. Well, she's right on the other side of the glass. She's with us now with today's news. Still ahead on Main Street, Oktoberfest fun at Wurst Beer Hall in downtown Fargo. And Annie Beck from the North Dakota Gateway to Science on how donor support fuels STEM learning across North Dakota. And that's all made possible by your support here at Prairie Public. It's all right after this news.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Josh Beauchet, broker and realtor with Real Broker LLC. With a team of agents serving homebuyers, sellers, and investors throughout North Dakota, the Detroit Lakes area, and northwest Minnesota. Josh can be reached at 701-367-3513.
Wow, some nice musical introduction. Merrill's a member of a band. Merrill, do you ever pop in with anything that's cool, that's forceful there?
Well, you know, we don't have a horn section. I play harmonica, and I think something that we just heard would call for a kazoo, I think.
Well, we are in the Main Street studio, Merrill Pepcorn and me. Merrill is a longtime host of Main Street, set in this chair for 13 years, Merrill. And, of course, he's the current voice of Dakota Datebook. He comes in and voices those for our listeners, and it's such a pleasant voice, Merrill, that we get to hear and continue to hear from you. So thank you so much for that. Merrill, I get the opportunity to focus on things that are local. And I think you did too when you were in this chair. Sometimes national news dominates the noise, takes the oxygen out of the room. But we get a chance to talk about things, Merrill, that are important to North Dakota. And that's why we're here in the middle of this fall pledge drive, hoping that folks either call 800-359-4145 or donate right now at prairiepublic.org. Merrill, in the last few days, I've been to Bismarck. I'll air this feature on Monday. Got to spend an incredible bit of time with the gentleman who has dementia and is living with dementia. And he and his wife were so gracious to visit with us about their journey. That will air on Monday. This week, we were in the Voorhees Chapel on the University of Jamestown campus.
I caught that one, yeah.
Beautiful. Oh, it's so beautiful. Yeah. I've been in there several times. I met my daughter-in-law in that chapel for the very first time when she and my son were students at the University of Jamestown, and to see what they've done is just spectacular. Of course, we brought local information about vaccines here in the first segment of Main Street. So, local news. We think we bring value to our listeners, and we're asking them to support Prairie Public.
That is one of the great highlights, one of the great benefits of Prairie Public Radio. We reach all corners of the state, and the rural, you know, we're always talking about trouble getting services, health services, education services, media services to remote corners of the state. Well, this is what Prairie Public Radio can do. And, you know, traditionally, Prairie Public Radio has been nonpartisan in its support. And I just want to talk about a couple of those instances. Senator John Andrist, who passed away not that many years ago from Crosby, North Dakota, served in the state Senate for many years, a Republican leader, highly honored, highly revered by his colleagues. He was important in getting Prairie Public Radio over much of northwestern North Dakota. It was personal to him. He worked at it and had the support of his colleagues. Back during Governor Ed Schaefer, Republican Governor Ed Schaefer, used to be out jogging when he was governor, jogging around Bismarck. He'd jog right into the Prairie Public Radio studio out there, sit down with Dave Thompson, and pitch fundraising with Dave Thompson. Heidi Heitkamp, well-known Democrat. Wayne Stengem, well-known Republican. They pitched at the same time. They would have contests between families. Okay, Wayne, can your family raise more money or can mine? Just examples of how nonpartisan, broad public support to Prairie Public can make a difference. 800-359-4145, the number to call. You show your support, or prairiepublic.org.
If you're a techie, you can go right there. And the beauty of it is, Merrill, it takes just about 90 seconds. Either way, it takes a small part of your day. But every dollar raised now is so important and will power our vision and Prairie Public for the future. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. It's Thursday, and of course, it's time to learn more about the North Dakota Gateway to Science. Annie Beck, a STEM educator at the North Dakota Gateway to Science, joins us again. And Annie, today, we're going to talk about a little, maybe a bit at the business side in some aspects of what happens at the North Dakota Gateway to Science. Grants, the impact of donors. It's so important to what you do and what you offer the state every day.
Absolutely. We could not do what we do without it. Thanks so much for having me back again.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back. It's so great to talk to you.
So with all of the wonderful things that we have for our guests to experience, none of those come for free, unfortunately. But luckily, we have so many amazing donors in all levels, big and small, across the state, from individual donors to corporations to nonprofit, you name it. So one example of what we've been able to do is we recently got a North Dakota Natural Trust grant. And with that, the main thing that we were able to do is we've purchased a 20-foot by 30-foot map of North Dakota that has all of North Dakota's watersheds, all the waterways on it. So it was printed by Indigo Signs. And so with this map, we can have it spread out either in our building or in one of the schools or communities we go and visit to. And we are part of the grant also is developing workshops with this and what we can teach through it. So we have lessons on map reading, invasive species, just what watersheds are and why they're important. And we also throw in other elements like robotics. So as you're learning about a watershed, why not learn a little bit about robotics and use your robot to be driving through it? So the cross-curricular area, you know, the making connections across subjects and from where you are at to the wider picture you know, seeing how their tiny little stream or lake or part of their river connects to the larger area and what they can do to help protect their watershed.
One of the things I think it's important to emphasize, and you've touched on it here briefly, is that the grants that you get, the donor and philanthropical support that you get, allows you to take what you have at the Gateway to Science out to the entire state. It's not just something that people have to travel to Bismarck to experience at the North Dakota Gateway to Science.
Absolutely. So in our gallery, when you look at exhibits, they often are signed by many wonderful donors who have donated that specific exhibit. But like you said, you don't just have to come here. We come to schools and communities literally in every corner of the state, bringing specific workshops. So if a teacher has a specific subject or standard they want us to go over with their class, we can do those. Or we also offer what are called STEM zones. And that is when we set up 10 different activities in all areas of STEM. And then groups of students come through kind of carnival style and are able to experience many different STEM activities.
Before we let you go, I want to talk about the North Dakota Gateway to Science and the endowment fund with the North Dakota Community Foundation. And from an educator's viewpoint, I guess, from your viewpoint, how does having an endowment like that influence your long-term planning? And I think even the sustainability of what you do, not just today, but for a long time.
Absolutely. You know, so individual one-time contributions are obviously wonderful and much appreciated, but having endowments and having that long-term support really allows us to plan for the future. You know, whether it's planning on hiring, whether it's planning on starting up new initiatives or new programming for us to offer, it allows us to have that stability to do the dreaming and the planning and the work to continue to grow and make things better and better.
Annie Beck, she joins us on Thursdays. It's from the North Dakota Gateway to Science, where she is a STEM educator. STEM, of course, means?
Science, technology, engineering, and math.
Thanks for joining us again, Annie.
Thanks so much.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, headquartered in Bismarck, a Touchstone Energy cooperative producing reliable electricity for 140 member rural electric systems in 9 states.
I like bagels.
Have some salad.
All right, eat a pizza.
Eat some barbecue.
Apple sauce and some nice red beets.
Welcome to Prairie Plates, served weekly here on Main Street on Prairie Public. And this week we have some special guests in with us to talk Oktoberfest food, beer, events in downtown Fargo. And one of the special guests is Sebastian Ramos. I'm going to call him Sebi for short because he's a friend of mine, and his lovely girlfriend, Hannah. And Hannah, say your last name for us.
Blazinski Schul.
Well, I'm glad you said it because that's a long last name, but... Let's talk a little bit about Oktoberfest at Wurst Beer Hall downtown, which Sebi owns, manages, and cooks at. And Sebi, talk a little bit about some of the festivities, the Oktoberfest festivities at Wurst Beer Hall downtown.
Okay, yeah, we got boot races every Friday, Saturday night, Stein holding. You just come on in and let them know that you want to participate. And then once we get a good group of people that want to have some fun and do some German festivities, we start that up. And then this Saturday, October 4th at 5 p.m., we have a broad eating contest that's sponsored by Alsager Meats. And everyone gets dressed up, lederhosens, drindles, the whole nine yards. And it's a great time.
How long do you have to eat brats? Is it like a half an hour, an hour, 10 minutes? How long do you go?
Okay, so we came up with Alsager's that we should do 10 brats, and whoever finishes them first gets the grand prize. And they're third-pound brats, but they're not in our traditional baguette bread. They got a hot dog bun, so it should be a little easier. But I'm anticipating I'd be great if someone did it in under 10 minutes, but I'm picturing 10 to 15 minutes for sure.
Do they do like the hot dog eating contest where they dip the bun in water and do that sort of thing?
We'll give them that option if they want to go the competitive eating route. Otherwise, last year, I don't think we had anybody dip in water, but a professional eater, I'm sure, would know the tricks.
What does Oktoberfest mean to Wurst Beer Hall downtown?
It's almost everything. It kind of rejuvenates the place. Everyone comes downtown and gets to truly experience a mini Oktoberfest. Han and I ourselves were just in Munich prior to Oktoberfest, and seeing that was great. And then I can just imagine what it's like over there. So I just want to bring people in Fargo something similar to that, especially if they have German heritage or they just love German beer.
Well, let's talk about that trip to Germany a little bit, and then we'll get into the food because you also cook. You're a man of many talents, just like
you.
You're welcome. Many in the restaurant industry. I mean, you folks work hard. But before we get into some of the food offerings, let's talk a little bit about that trip to Germany because I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, it was Hannah's birthday gift. It was 5 months late, but we had to make it work when we could. So we flew into Frankfurt, and we spent a little time there. We traveled over to Switzerland in the Neuchâtel region, and then we made our way back to Munich. And we stopped at the Paulaner House, and that was, I hate to say it, but that was the best beer I've ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. I know we get the same one here that's imported over. But, I mean, once you have one there, it's all, not life-changing, but it's eye-opening how great it truly is. And we had a great time. We had the pretzels. We had the sausages, the kraut.
Jägerschnitzel.
Yep. She had the Jägerschnitzel.
Yum.
Yeah. And I think ours is good. Theirs is great. I really took some notes on how they do things better than I can, and then I hope to capitalize on that and bring that to Fargo so people can experience that.
Well, when you make those improvements, let me know, and I'll make a quick trip over. The studios are not too far away from Prairie Public, so it makes it very convenient. And a lot of people here like eating at Wurst Beer Hall downtown, so that kind of demonstrates that you guys do things very well over there. Let's talk a little bit more about the food offerings at Wurst Beer Hall downtown. There may be some specialty items right now, but there are also a lot of German-style items, such as Jägerschnitzel, but there are a lot of other things.
Yeah, so Jägerschnitzel is our most famous, most popular dish by far. Comes with the Spätzle dumplings and the mushroom gravy, served with braised red cabbage. And then we have Kuchen, of course, and Currywurst, which, to my knowledge, is somewhat of a fast food item in Germany. And then we've kind of doctored it up a little bit, and that's served with any sausage of your choice. I recommend the German sausage or the Polish, and then it's topped with curry powder and your choice aside, French fries, sweet fries, Nefla, anything you name it.
Mm-hmm. That Nefla soup is Germans from Russia food, and we make a point to point that out here at Prairie Public because we've aired a lot of specials on the Germans from Russia. Sebi, talk a little bit more about some of the other food items. I really enjoy the Porchetta Fargo, the chicken cordon bleu sandwich, some of those things.
Okay, yeah. The Porchettas originated from the Iron Range, the way that they do it now. My cousins grew up there, and that's who I bought the place from.
Bert and Klaus Myers with Beer and Fish and Dempsey's.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they grew up there, and that was just a staple in their cuisine. And so it's just a pork butt, and it's got garlic, fennel, olive oil, pepper, salt. It's a simple recipe. It brines in it, and then we cook it for 6 hours, slice it relatively thin, and then it pops onto the flat top, warm it up with the spinach, peppercinis, and the five cheese blend, and it's served on a warm bun. And that's truly probably my favorite. Hannah knows that. Mm-hmm. When I'm eating there, I get the porchetta a lot. The cordon bleu is a great option. We have a Polish Reuben that I added to the menu, and that's taken off. That's done extremely well.
That I need to try. Yes.
Yeah, the Polish I had last night, it's incredible. And I got a little advice there, too, from my cousin Bert on the Reuben sauce. So with adding kraut into it and cream cheese. So that gives it more of that creamy texture compared to what we were using with our house sauce. So
I know where I'm going for dinner.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll be ready.
Well, Hannah, we're going to turn to you because you're the beer expert here. And I love German beers. There's a Spaten Optimator I really enjoy. A lot of the Polliner stuff, the Hefeweizens. There are other beers out there, obviously. But Hannah, what are some of your favorite German beers or some of the German beers offered during this time at Wurst Beer Hall downtown?
Well, I'm no expert by any means, but we right now have an Oktoberfest lineup for Oktoberfest, and we've been kind of switching through a few different breweries for that. So we featured Surly, Shells. We've had on a couple Polliner Fest options as well, too. And with that, we've even had like an Oktoberfest flight where people can have one of each of those offerings. And that's just a good way to try each of those Oktoberfest beers. But year round, we have actual German beers as well, too. And we've got a good group of people that come to us almost daily just for the German beer, since it's such a rare thing to find around here. So,
are there any local Marzen or Bock style beers? I know Drecker offers some, Laughing Sun and Bismarck, Junkyard, any of those?
We haven't had any of those this year. Surly and Shells would probably be the closest that we've had.
I love Shells. I mean, that's down in southern Minnesota, and there's a lot of Germans. There are a lot of Germans down there, that's for sure. And Shells, just a good beer.
Mm-hmm. I love that brewery, Shells. I went there a couple years ago and knew them.
Yes,
we also
amazing.
Have Bemidji Oktoberfest,
mm-hmm.
Bemidji Brewing Company. So that's another closer one to Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anything else going on at Wurst Beer Hall downtown for Oktoberfest? Are people dressing up, lederhosen, music, any of that?
Yeah, I think it would be fantastic to see a bunch of people dressing up and coming out on Friday and Saturday especially. Especially Saturday. That's our big kind of end of celebration thing. And you can get yourself a free Hefeweizen if you come dressed up. So people should take advantage of that.
Well, I better get my lederhosen on.
Yes,
then.
Please,
you
Rick.
You might see me marching in there in some lederhosen.
So the staff will all be in drindles and lederhosens. We even have some cooks and chefs that wear it in the back. So no one's out of place if they show up wearing that. The girls are skipping, the guys are jumping, and it's a great time. The German music is played from open to close. Doesn't turn off, so mm-hmm. people get into the Ziggy Zoggy mood for sure.
Well, we're big into Lawrence Welk here and accordion. Is anybody going to show up and play accordion?
That's a blast from the past. I know they did that once. I wasn't smart enough to think to reach out for that, but maybe next year then, that'd be something to think about for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sebi and Hannah, it's been a pleasure. It's been great having you in here. We'll wrap things up. This has been Prairie Plates on Main Street here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for October 2nd. The establishment of a university in Grand Forks was a raucous affair, full of intense political maneuvering, typical of territories on the verge of statehood. Legislators competed fiercely to secure prestigious and lucrative institutions for their communities, like schools and hospitals. George Walsh of Grand Forks quickly introduced a bill for an act locating the University of North Dakota at Grand Forks, North Dakota. It was rather fortunate for Walsh that no one noticed he was in such a hurry to introduce the bill. He hadn't actually written it yet. 2 days before it was scheduled to be read in community, he held up a sheaf of blank pages as he submitted the proposal. Then he went home, hurriedly wrote the bill, and the Dakota Territorial Assembly passed it just 2 days later. The university was officially established even before North Dakota became a state. Local developer William Budge, a successful businessman, immediately saw the advantage of having a university in Grand Forks. He donated 20 acres of flat ground for the site. The cornerstone of Old Main, the first building on campus, was laid on this date in 1883. Old Main housed everything, offices, classrooms, the library, and even dorm rooms. Throughout the 1880s, UND occupied just a few acres of land, nearly 2 miles west of Grand Forks, surrounded by farms and fields. Students living off campus rode a horse-drawn bus to class. The university has seen many changes since those modest beginnings. As enrollment grew, so did the campus. Normal student life was interrupted by major events. In 1918, the flu epidemic hit the campus hard. That same year, UND was transformed into an army base during World War I. During the Great Depression, the university supported struggling students by offering free housing in exchange for manual labor on campus. The old railroad cabooses used for housing earned the nickname Camp Depression. Today, Old Main is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, recognized for its place of honor as the university's first building, and celebrated for its impressive Richardsonian Romanesque architecture. It's joined on the register by the Memorial Union and the Carnegie Library, all notable landmarks on the UND campus. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting art programming here on Prairie Public.
And as Main Street winds down on this Thursday, pleased to be in the Main Street studio live with Merrill Pepcorn. Merrill, of course, held this chair on Main Street here at Prairie Public for a long, long time. Merrill, we're hoping that folks will take a moment this afternoon, go to prairiepublic.org and pledge their support, become a sustaining member. Those dollars are so important. And my goal is to help folks think about who public radio is built for. It's built for them. It's built for our listeners. It's built for the people that are listening right now. And as we said in an earlier pledge break, Merrill, it's about local journalism. It's about local stories. And it's about conversations that make people maybe think a little bit. Music for Prairie Public also lifts our spirit. And when you support Prairie Public, you're not just giving to the station. You're giving yourself, kind of your community, reliable, thoughtful, and trustworthy source of information every single day.
And you know, Craig, I think that's what Dakota Datebook does. And the other local programming, like Natural North Dakota with Chuck Lura, Tom Ezern's Plains Folk Column, Tom Brousseau's Great American Folk Show. That's some of the local programming that you get from Prairie Public that you're not going to get anywhere else, that's made possible because you, listeners, join people like me who are members. You know, I used to work here. I used to get paid to work here. I volunteer now my voice for Dakota Datebook, and I am a member, dues-paying member of Prairie Public, so to speak, and proud to be so. And it's because of your membership dollars, your contributions, whether it's a basic membership or a larger membership, that are good. That's going to keep us on the air, especially in light of these recent cuts. Do your part right now, and you'll feel good about it. 1-800-359-4145 or go to prairiepublic.org and contribute online. It's important that you do it now.
Merrill, we moved to North Dakota 3 years ago yesterday.
Wow. Congratulations.
All of the folks you just spoke of gave us a sense of place.
Yeah.
No place else could do that. Prairiepublic.org. Thank you. And that wraps up this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. Thanks so much for spending part of your day with us. Before we go, a quick reminder, there's still time to make your pledge during our fall fun drive. Your support keeps trusted conversations, local stories, and programs that add real value to your life on air every day. If you've been thinking about giving, now is the perfect time to join the community of listeners who make all of this possible. Please make your pledge at prairiepublic.org or by calling 800-359-4145. From all of us here at Prairie Public, thank you.
Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the 50s. Your Friday tomorrow, increasing clouds, breezy south, central, and east. Highs in the mid-70s northwest to around 90 degrees in the southeast. And your Saturday looking to be mostly cloudy, showers likely southwest, and a chance of showers elsewhere. A slight chance of thunderstorms south, central, and east late in the afternoon and evening, with lows
in the 50s north and west to the upper 60s in the southeast. That's your weather from member-supported Prairie Public. Coming up next hour, All Things Considered.
We have parents asking every day for vaccines. They want the COVID vaccine, and we don't have it.
As winter approaches, getting that COVID-19 vaccine is still tough because of delays by the CDC.
We will explain what is going on this Thursday, October 2nd, on All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Elsa Chang.
And I'm Scott Detrow. As the government shutdown continues, how are national park employees feeling about job security?
Also, on the eve of the WNBA Finals, controversy over the gender pay gap.
What people need to understand, we need great leadership in this time across all levels.